Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, before we started the segment, you were telling me it's a busy week for you, my friend.
Yeah, Penn State is going to have Lift for Life this week, so that's something you can check out at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com when we talk to everybody. James Franklin's going to speak. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. But more than anything, like, I am kind of a recluse now that I live out in the woods and I leave the house about once a week. I've got something where I've got to be in town every single day this week. So it's a weird week for T. Frank, where I actually have to, like, go outside and put on deodorant and make sure that I don't do anything weird or socially unacceptable for five straight days. It's bizarre.
And you've got to deal with people. I had a friend of mine who always said, my issue is I just hate people. Just hate people.
So. Well, that's a great way. There's 8 billion of them on the planet. That's like saying, I hate oxygen and trees.
He probably hated those also, T. Frank. So you're going to have to actually mix with people. I hope you will survive the week. Just a quick comment on Lift for Life. If you've never been there, been involved with it, it's a great, fun event. And by the way, our colleague, Andrew P. Shea, is part of that team. So if you manage to make it out there, I suspect Andrew will be there. Stop by, say hello to him. All right. Last week, T. Frank, we decided this was a gym version of Ask T. Frank. We were going to go through position by position, and I was going to have the opportunity to ask you questions. And we weren't going to do it in the traditional way. Hey, running backs, how good are they, T. Frank? But get a little more specific with our questions. I had questions for the entire team, and we didn't even make it halfway through, T. Frank.
Yeah.
Which I will call that a success. It means we hit questions that were worth talking about. So we're going to pick up with where we left off. And last week we talked offense completely, but we didn't even get through all of my questions.
Oh, okay. All right. So what do we got?
We're going to pick it up from there. And I, you know, gave as my example running back. So I want to start there. Okay. My question is, and it's one that's been going on for at least a year, are there more explosive plays out there for Nick Singleton?
Yeah, yes, that is the point of this offense. The point of this offense is to generate explosive plays and points, but a lot of that comes through the running game, and a lot of that comes through Andy Kotelnicki and what he does and how he does it. And there, people keep asking me, and we dig and dig and dig and dig on these topics, and it's like, okay, so other than shifts and motions, what does he do to get guys open? And it's like, well, that... It's like, okay, so you take your favorite recipe. Other than eggs, flour, and sugar, like, what makes a cake? And so, like, it, yes, there are other ingredients, there are other things, but there are some building blocks, and those are the main things that he uses as far as personnel packages and creating a level of uncertainty in the defense. There was a video this week, I think, from State Media talking about Andy Kotelnicki. It was Anthony Poindexter talking about going up against that defense, and he said it's hard to train young safeties against this defense because they just don't sit still. They don't present you a clean picture. So if you are unsure, if you're filling on the backside, or you're supposed to rotate into the deep middle of the field if you have some sort of coverage rotation, or if you've got to have checks and communication pre-snap, and they're playing ring around the rosy before the snap, it creates all of this uncertainty in the defense. So more missed assignments. Even if you are playing the run and you're saying, we're going to put eight in the box and we're going to make sure you don't run the football, there is a certain level of overwhelm with numbers that you just can't scheme around, but there will be more opportunities, especially if the passing game can balance things out, that this running game will generate much more explosion than it did last year. And truthfully, the difference in the explosiveness in the run game was maybe four or five plays. Maybe six, and that creates a real difference in the final yardage tallies, the data, and the feel of an offense in a given season. So they weren't terribly far off last year. The inefficiency of that offense was the problem. This is the hallmark of this offense is the efficiency, which you get to through these explosive plays. So not just Nick Singleton, but Catron Allen, anyone who touches the ball, any quarterback that runs the ball, there are these opportunities and literal running lanes, avenues for you to have explosive plays in this offense.
Well, first of all, on the cake question, T. Frank, there are some other things you can do. Add extra eggs, use butter instead of oil. You'll thank me later.
Okay.
Just now, getting back to with the running game, and it's interesting you talk about them being close, and it's only like five or six plays. But as you pointed out, five or six plays can make the difference in the season. You know, one of those explosive plays against a Michigan or Ohio State all of a sudden turns around the narrative of the whole game. And that's what, you know, you have to realize when doing this. Now, last year when Mike Yurcich was let go over the last two games, again, you know, a game against Michigan State, and all of a sudden we were seeing explosive plays. And fans, like myself, pointed out, hey, look, there it is. They can do that. Were we overreacting to that when, hey, this was Michigan State playing out the string at the end of the season, or were there specific things they were doing then that said, okay, there it is. They've kind of opened up there was the key to open up the more explosive plays for the running backs.
It's always both. Michigan State last year, specifically at the end of the season, was, I don't even know how to describe the level of bad. It was players that clearly didn't understand their assignment on a given play, which is that's coaching of either you had injuries or these guys are not being communicated to clearly, or they've checked out. So like safeties who are supposed to be in a deep half of the field and are just running with somebody randomly and like not playing with discipline. So there were explosive plays in that game that were Michigan State is bad, but talking about the running game, I remember there was a screen pass to Nick Singleton on an RPO out in the flat, and that's something that they hadn't done almost all season, is put the players in positions like that to do different things. And then in the bowl game, there were some explosive plays early in that game against Ole Miss that I think were also indicative of a change. But the problem was, like, again, they couldn't sustain it as the game went on because of the score and the pressure put on by Ole Miss. And just generally, some of the things that they were doing were unsustainable. So there are flashes and indications that all can be correct if you have a cohesive game plan. And Andy Kotelnicki, if there's one thing he has a cohesive plan, an idea of offense playing off each other from a run and pass perspective and different run elements in the system playing off each other. Again, I felt like at times Mike Yurcich did that at Penn State, but last season it felt like there was a intentional curtailing of the amount of things they were doing in order to be really good at a few number of things. And that led to, without the ability to apply that stuff correctly, a certain staleness to the offense. That will not be the case this year. The question this year will be, is everyone on the same page? Do we understand what we're doing? Is everyone have their assignments correct in the first year of putting in a new game plan? That's the biggest thing to me, is especially in the first month of the season, and honestly at West Virginia, are they going to be out of the box ready to go? And if not, can they survive that opening game against a Power 4 opponent that is a pretty good team? And so I think you'll see this definitely throughout the season. It's just going to be how quickly can they get up to speed with this stuff.
All right. The one position we didn't hit on the offense is the offensive line. And T. Frank, I'm not sure fans realize there were three NFL draft picks on that line. Yeah. One, you know, a high first round pick. They've lost both tackles. We talk about the offensive line turning the corner in the last couple seasons. We talk about how much depth they have. Okay, there's depth this year, but do they have the talent to replace two very good NFL caliber tackles?
The talent, yes, they have the talent to replace them. This is where all of that recruiting and the stockpiling of linemen over the last couple of years is really going to show itself whether that was fruitful or not, because you have the situation where you need to reload and not rebuild. And you've had Drew Shelton waiting in the wings for 3 years now. This is the natural cycle of this is his third season. It's time for him to take that step and be the starter on the left side. A little shorter curve there for Anthony Donko, where he's got to be a guy who, as a redshirt freshman, is at the very least a strong participant, if not the starter, which the way it's going, I think everyone expects that to be. And then you've got Nick Dawkins and then the guards. So I think there's enough talent and depth here to be good. But are you scheming around them, or can you do whatever you want based on the talent you have up front to really maximize the offensive scheme? And that's going to be the question to me, is are they scheming around the tackles and pass protection? Are they scheming around some of the interior guys who are different than they had last year? Or do they have guys that can take it to the next level this year and really break out in this system to be stars? I think they have guys up front that have star-like quality. Venga Iwane, to me, is a guy that has not just NFL, but really, really high college football ability. They need to get the most out of him. And again, that's where we talk about the I hate doing this again, but last season they leaned heavily on, we have a good offensive line, they're going to execute, we're not going to be as diverse because we want them to just bully people up front. And they were good. They were able to do that in most games. But when it came to the point where they had to get play against somebody that had a similar level of talent, similar level of coaching, they were not good enough to then just overwhelm and overcome. This year, they're going to need some help because they got young players at certain positions, but they have the talent level to eventually get there. And that's, I think, the biggest unprecedented part of this offense is, where does that land? I know everyone's focusing on the receivers, but I think that's kind of is what it is. The offensive line has a big delta for performance this year, and that's the part I'm most curious about. I think the receivers, they're going to improve from the efficiency conversation we had. The offensive line has the similar opportunity with this offense, but they do need to reach a certain level of play so that it unlocks the whole playbook.
That also leads to the question that you brought up, you know, will they be ready day one? Day one is on the road at West Virginia. A pretty good team, not a great team, but a pretty good team. Yep. And you've got a new coordinator. You've got two new tackles. You've got a new center. That's a lot of change going into your very first game into a hostile environment. We'll see if they've got themselves ready for that. All right, T. Frank, we're actually going to go to the other side of the ball and the defense when we come back in quarter number two.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is T. Frank Carr. I am Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. It's my opportunity to ask T. Frank. We're taking a look at this upcoming 2024 season. We're kind of going position by position with specific questions. We're not just doing the general, hey, is that position going to be any good or not? And on the defensive side, I'm going to start with this, and it's probably a question. The big difference, we are going from Manny Diaz, who a lot of us were huge fans of Manny Diaz and how he, his system and how he played it. Although I think he got a lot of help from a lot of talent on the defense, and they're now going to Tom Allen. Question is, what will we see as the difference as a fan watching? What's the first thing you're going to notice that Tom Allen is the coordinator as opposed to Manny Diaz?
Well, the main thing will be the personnel. I think James Franklin has talked about this pretty clearly, that they're going to lean on three safeties this year. The loss of King Mack, I think, brings a little bit of uncertainty to how resilient that could be if there's anybody gets nicked up. Do they have a fourth safety to come in and play? Before, that group was going to lead the team. Now you have to rely on a couple of other different people in positions if something were to happen. So I think Jay Reid playing that lion position is going to be a big difference, and the versatility of the secondary is going to be a big difference. Of I expect there to be some of this stuff that I've detailed this offseason where you're going to see a guy like Jalen Reid lined up 9.5 yards off the line of scrimmage. And if you're a coach, if you're a quarterback, what do you do with that? What do you do with a guy when you have three safeties that are all 8 yards off the line of scrimmage and you don't know where they're going to be post-snap? Now, that leads into a little bit of uncertainty for the defense of can you get to your run gap in time and are you giving up an opportunity for a big run play? But it also creates a lot of confusion, a lot of uncertainty. Talk about that on the offensive side with the Penn State offense. The defense is going to create a certain level of uncertainty and unpredictability with their coverages. Something I'm curious about, and I've talked about this all offseason, is what's Tom Allen going to do now that he has more talent on the defensive line? I asked him about that, and he basically gave me the coach answer if I'm not going to tell you. he has the ability to play. So at Indiana, he played a pretty clear one technique and a pretty clear three technique as far as where they would align and their jobs. Now he's got guys that can play both. He's got talented players that last season literally never stood still. They were never in the same gap pre and post snap. How much of that do they retain from Manny Diaz's defense? How much does he rely on some of the traditional alignments and traditional plays of, we're just going to slant. We're not going to slant with a twist and a stunt and then a cherry on top. You're not going to customize your burrito bowl to have all of the ingredients. Is it going to be a little pared down, or is he going to open up his playbook to that level of thing, stuff that's already there that they know how to do? That's the biggest question to me. But when you're watching, and this is the problem, if you're watching on TV, you're not going to see a lot of these differences in the secondary unless they're making big plays and interceptions, and then you're going to see it on the review. But the safety play and the way that this defense architecturally is designed on third down and in obvious passing situations, I think creates a lot of havoc for the offense and can, in the right situation, get you those interceptions and big defensive plays that maybe aren't as focused on pressure and they're focused on getting the football. And those safeties are the key to how he does a lot of this stuff.
T. Frank, I like how you always use a food analogy. We went cake in quarter number one, quarter two. Now we're going burrito.
My family is terrible with analogies. Growing up, my brother, my sister, and I, we'd all sit around and we'd be like, so it's kind of like, and we get all excited and that we wouldn't have something on the back end. And so I'm just glad that I'm 2 for 2 so far instead of freezing and sounding like an idiot.
And I always appreciate it that it's a food analogy. I think that helps me to understand things. Now, we, as part of the media, and I think the fan base also, we look at this, you know, 4-3 to 4-2, meaning multiple safeties. Now, and I'm going to ask you about this later, that, you know, this all changes down to down in distance and so on. But just on the base, when you're going 4-3 to 4-2, which just means a third safety instead of a third linebacker, how does that player's responsibilities differ than that third safety compared to a third linebacker?
That's the point, is it doesn't. The defense doesn't change. The rules and the roles don't change dramatically. It's what is that player's strength and what are you leaning into? And that's it. So, you know, we talked about Curtis Jacobs playing over there. He is a linebacker. He is suited to play the run. He is physical. He can take on guards. He can get into the backfield. He can, set a hard edge on the pocket if he is in the C gap. And he's athletic. He can run and match with tight ends. But is he a safety that you could then put on a slot receiver? Or in this situation, and this is to me the biggest difference, is can he play a deep third or a deep quarter, where that's where a safety can play a true secondary role as opposed to a linebacker? And then on the flip side, is Jalen Reid strong enough to take on a tight end or to beat an offensive lineman if there's a pulling scheme and suddenly he's out in the flat and he's got to either beat that guy and get a tackle for a loss, or he's got to hold an edge and let another guy rally to the football, or let a linebacker, Kobe King, you know, scrape over top and get to the ball. So those are the different things. You've still got to cover every gap, and you've still got to cover every player, but what are you focusing on? And this is a more pass-oriented, stopping explosive play, stopping the nickel and dime of throwing underneath, as opposed to, you know, run heavy fronts, stopping teams that way, and then having a third down package that you bring in a nickel corner anyway. And this defense, by the way, there's a strong chance they go dime where they have the safety, the line package, and then a slot corner comes on as well. So there's a lot of versatility in the personnel of this defense, which is a nice mirror to what the offense does too.
And that's the point too, T-Frank. Down in distance, you've got a slot defender, a slot cornerback that we all knew last year. It was Daquan Hardy coming in and playing the slot. By the way, when Daquan Hardy came in playing the slot cornerback, what position came off the field typically?
It would typically, last year, it was either a linebacker. So it changed, which is why I'm umming and ahhing here, because there were times you had Abdul Carter and you had Curtis Jacobs on the field together, and Jacobs would be playing the Mike linebacker position, or they'd flip depending on, you know, the alignment or what they wanted out of that particular play. Then they went, after they were giving up too many plays on third down and long when they were running the football, they would stay in their base package. So nobody would come on the field, and then they would drop into a five-man front and you'd have Abdul Carter rushing off the edge. So they sometimes went three down and defensive tackle comes off the field, or both defensive tackles come off the field. You have all D ends, and then you have King and Jacobs. They had a lot of versatility, but typically it was either a one technique defensive tackle or the Mike linebacker coming off in that situation.
Which the point and where I was headed with that kind of question, T Frank, is again, depending on down and distance, we get so locked into, oh, this is no longer a 4-3, it's a 4-2. Well, that's just the base setup anyway, that responsibilities that player has as a third safety is similar to the linebacker, where they had both run support and pass coverage responsibilities. They will still have that, even though it's a safety doing it. But again, third and long, third and short, you're going to be doing something completely different anyway.
Yeah, and you're going to need different personnel for those situations. Modern college football and the expansion of the Big Ten, I think that this is a fair transition into into something James Franklin wanted to do the whole time. Like, this is a defense they brought from Vanderbilt, but they just had too many linebackers that were good and had to be on the football field. And that's kind of the flexibility of not being married to a scheme and to one particular idea when you're in the Big Ten and you're facing Iowa all the time, as they have been for the last 10 years, and you have Michigan on the schedule and you need to have a little more beef. Like, this is the way college football has been going for years, football in general. Like, a lot of teams play nickel defense in the NFL without a third linebacker. In fact, I'd say 95% of them don't play a Sam linebacker at all. So you have this trend, and this is really, I think also it speaks to recruiting, where you can find guys that are less athletic corners that are bigger, that can play this position as a quasi-safety, quasi-linebacker. It's easier to find that guy than it is to find a hyper-athletic linebacker that can play the Sam and also cover. So it adds versatility in a lot of different ways to your organization.
And you brought up a good point with the schedule that I hadn't thought about. If there were two teams that you identified as just trying to run ball down your throat, yeah, it's Iowa, Michigan. Penn State's been playing them every year. Neither one is on the schedule this year.
Yeah, Illinois is there, and Brett Bielema is going to make that a priority. We saw that in 2021. And there is a certain level of, you need to have the personnel on your roster to contend with that style of offense. But once you have those guys, you're good. Like, it is not a complicated scheme to try and dissect. You just need to be able to hold the point of attack. This is kind of, I think, I value the run game. And sometimes it comes off that I don't. My point is only that being successful in the run game is so much harder than being successful in the passing game, especially in a modern game where you can take out some of those risky variables of throwing the football down the field by RPOs, screens, throwing the football underneath. You don't have to have such risky plays where you get sacks and turnovers and interceptions because you can augment your run game in an easier way and you don't have to beat your head on a wall. But you still need to have a wall if you're the defense. You need to set that line of scrimmage, and that doesn't change. It's just, where are you allocating your resources, time, and attention? And if you're good against the run, you can allocate more resources to the pass game and create these really, really stout defenses that we've seen recently from Penn State football, where they have been able to dominate both levels of the defense in different ways, but come out with really strong run defense and coverage.
Which, of course, reminds me of the old coach who said, when you throw the ball, T. Frank, there's three possibilities. And two of them are bad, T. Frank.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You also get pass interference now, so you need to update your... Like, people tell me that all the time. I've heard that multiple times. I'm like, yeah, you're not accounting for pass interference, which is half of all passing plays now.
Yeah, that's it. The part of the design of the offensive passing game is working on getting a pass interference call. Hey, if it works, T. Frank, it works. All right, that is going to be it for quarter number two. We will get back to our questions on the defense when we get to quarter number four. But coming up, quarter number three, it's your questions. We are going to ask T. Frank. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's T. Frank. It's quarter number three, and we're going to ask T. Frank. This time, though, instead of my questions, it's going to be your questions. And if you want to ask T. Frank a question, really easy, just download our app, Keystone Sports, and then you'll see the Ask T. Frank button. Easy as that. You ready to roll, T. Frank?
Less easy on my part because I have to have a good answer. I think I can handle it, though. We've only done this every single week for the last 3 years, so I think I got it.
And so far, all the answers have been good. You know what that means? You're due for a clunker, T. Frank.
Are you giving me the kicker jinx? It feels like you're giving me the announcer jinx here.
It is. He has made 50 straight field goals in a row, T. Frank. This chip shot, there's no way he can miss this one. Let's start with Walton Meadville, who says there's major flaws, and do you consider them fixable?
Can you repeat that? You glitched a little bit there on the recording. I apologize.
Oh, I'm sorry. Walt from Meadville says, what are Drew Aller's major flaws, and do you consider them fixable?
His major flaws are feel at this point, I would say. Feel, and he talked about this. This is not me editorializing here. This is him talking about all of these things that I interviewed him on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel in March. He said some of the same things we were saying post the Peach Bowl. He understands where to go in the offense with the football at a high level. I value that as an analyst because I see so many quarterbacks that cannot get that part done. They don't have the mind for the position, whether they have the ability to throw the football 75 yards or they don't. His issue was still playing with timing and feel of decision-making where he was rushing these things because he knew the answer and he was trying to spit it out. Like in Jeopardy, you're not pressing the buzzer at the wrong time. So he needs to get into the flow of the offense and really play quarterback from that perspective. I think the other part is dovetailing off of that is confidence. And that is something that I think I believe he can do, because confidence comes from understanding and familiarity and time on task. Is he going to be Patrick Mahomes greatness in the moment? I don't know. That's the part that I don't think any of us can know. Some people think that they already know the answer because it's no, and they, he's shown that. I do think that there is an opportunity for him to develop there and to really the light to come on as long as those mental things click into place for him. So I guess playing with rhythm in the passing game and lowering his stimulation is what it's called, where you get overstimulated, you see the pressure coming, and then you try to have the answer too quickly so that you don't get a sack or a negative play, or you're chomping at the bit to get the big play. Lowering the stimulation so that you can perform and you can overcome your own adrenaline in the moment. This is, again, we talk about the comparisons early in his career to Josh Allen. Josh Allen had to learn to lower that stimulation, that threshold of amped upness, in order to play the position. So it's possible to become that guy, even though you've shown before that you're not. So those are the things, I think, to reach that next level that he can do this offseason. And he's talked about, he knows exactly what his weaknesses are. He is working on those things. And in Andy Kolnicki's offense, I think it'll be a little bit easier for him. He's not going to ask to shoulder the load every single play in order to have greatness for the offense. I think that there's a middle ground that can build him a little more this year.
You know, T. Frank, I love now you've gone to a Jeopardy analogy.
I don't think good. That one was right. I think you want to press it as soon as possible, actually.
No, you can't hit that button too soon on Jeopardy. They got to finish asking the question. So I think that was good. But, you know, the idea of fixing these things, the way you described it, I got to think this is just about experience, being on the field and experiencing it more. I'll use the analogy learning how to drive. When you're 16 years old, you might technically know how to do everything, but you just don't have the feel for it. The only way to get the feel for it is to be on the road. Yep. I think for a quarterback, the things you talk about, it's just a matter of being on the field, getting reps.
And to Walt's question, some of the technical things that result from the mental side of it are his footwork regresses. And he went through this transformation into the type of thrower that he is now, which is rotational. Talked to Brad Mandler about this on the channel, had interviews with him at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. He's gone through that transformation early in his life. But the problem is, when the pressure comes, those things break down. And to me, that is not a technical problem. That is a mental problem, to stay locked into your mechanics and to stay locked into your teaching and your training, because you're not reverting to things under pressure. And that's, I think, a constant battle for him that will get easier the longer he plays. But it is something that is going to be, from an accuracy standpoint, I think fans were frustrated with that last year. That is that overstimulation of, he knows what to do. He knows all the answers, from technique to the mental side of things, of understanding the coverages. He just needs to smooth it all out and play football. And when he talked about being confident, loose, cocky, whatever you want, that athletic hubris we've talked about here, that's it. That unlocks all of Drew Aller's talent.
Okay. Here's an interesting question. This is Ed from New Jersey, who says, what advice, T. Frank, would you give fans in watching the games to help them understand more of what is going on?
First off, you got to know what's coming before it happens. So this is a shameless plug. You should read my stuff before the game, because I watch the film of the offense and defense that are coming up and give you an idea of, okay, here's what they like to do. Here's what we might see during the game. That's what that is. 90% of football is knowing what's coming, to know where to put your eyes. But aside from that, don't watch the football. Just straight up, don't watch the football. You can watch where it goes eventually, the result of the play. But you should watch the other 21 players that aren't the quarterback or the running back, because they dictate the play. The offensive line, first indication, is it run or pass? That part is a little harder now because of RPOs, because the offensive line is run blocking no matter what until the quarterback pulls the ball and throws. I like watching the secondary, because that sets the table for, are they rotating an extra player into the box to stop the run? Are they playing coverage? What coverage are they playing? And then you can look at the route combinations and things like that. A lot of that happens off screen, though. So one of my favorite things on passing plays to watch edge rushers. If you didn't watch Chop Robinson last year and you were expecting sacks, right? If you didn't watch him beat the crap out of every right tackle and force the offense to change their plan halfway through the game, then you were missing the greatness of Chop Robinson last year. And I don't blame you for thinking first round pick, he barely did anything important. His presence alone caused teams to change their plan. They're running the ball on 3rd and 17. So I like watching edge rushers and tackles because that is going to set the tone for the whole game. And then safeties. Again, watching Tom Allen's defense, I think watching where the safeties go tells the quarterback all the stuff we just talked about with Drew Aller. That's where the information is coming from. Those players to understand then where he's going to put the ball and the opportunities he has to make big plays or to check the ball down, etc.
Okay, now, T. Frank, you're an expert in watching the game and doing the analysis. I'm not, but I've learned over the years from you and some other folks, and this may be cheating a little bit, but one of the things that I've done to learn what's going on is I rewatch games.
You have to. I don't, in the moment, I have no idea. You get probably 5% if you're watching and you're good on a first playthrough. Now, if you're really good, if you're a former player or current player, you can get maybe 50%. I don't know. But I have the ability. I get overwhelmed by all the details. I have a literal replay system I have in my studio. So during the commercial breaks, you're watching Doritos commercials. I'm rewatching 2nd and 5 to see what caused them to lose 2 yards on that run play. So that's where, you know, by the time we get into the post game show that I do, I'm trying to give you, here's what happened. So coaches say, I have to watch the film. I'm trying to watch the film during the game to give you that live analysis. Sometimes I get caught up in the moment. I get stuff really wrong. And then I have to issue an apology later, but I'm doing my absolute best to give you the, here's what happened. Here's what really happened during the game in the post game show. So that when your emotions come bubbling to the surface, I can say, here's why you're angry. Not just you're angry, fire X or bench who. Here's what happened. Here's why you're angry, or here's why you're happy and why you should feel good about this team going forward. I don't know. The negative always sticks with you. And like, those are the worst shows for me, is when I have to go on there and be like, here's the analytical approach. And what I'm being fed is a toxic fire of anger coming from the internet. So there's also good stuff where you get to see, okay, this was a special moment. This could be a breakout game for this player. Here's why.
And T. Frank, I love this topic because I could relate to what Ed is saying and relay the things that I've learned over the last couple of years. First of all, Chop Robinson, yes. And it always amazes me when I've seen some of those NFL scouting reports. Oh, he didn't put up very big numbers. Go watch the film, all right? He beats his guy every single play. But the ability, especially when there's a big play and you see like a sack, 9 times out of 10, someone on the offensive line made a mistake. You may not be sure which guy it was, but there was a mistake. You have 2 guys blocking one guy and nobody blocking another guy. And I'll bring up a play, T. Frank, also, that was an example. And I know you and I have talked about it. And it was the play where K.J. Winston made the interception last year.
Yeah.
And there were 2 cornerbacks blitzing from the same side. I mean, that's, in my mind, a ridiculous formation. But if you watch the replay, the quarterback, I think he's looking the right place, the right direction, where those cornerbacks are coming from. They're vacating an area. KJ Winston is anticipating all of this happening, rotates over, makes the interception. So guess what? When I'm there at games now, I would look for that formation again, and I would be aware of it before it happens now because I learned it by watching the replay.
And the amazing thing about that is, and that this speaks to kind of the brilliance of Manny Diaz, is you're, as a quarterback, taught to replace the blitz with the ball. So 2 corners are blitzing on that side. My hot route is over there. I'm absolutely throwing the sticks over there. I'm throwing the receivers running to 6 yards and turning around. Manny Diaz knows that. The anticipation of KJ Winston to rotate. And it was like watching a tidal wave. The safeties, the whole coverage, the umbrella shifts over to where they're replacing those blitzing players of Hardy in the slot. And then I think it was Kalen King or Johnny Dixon at this point. And that's how you get those anticipatory interceptions. Again, watching the secondary to see where the ball is going to go, dead indicator of what they were going to do. And the second layer of beauty of that was they were essentially doing all of these different things and playing one coverage. So they were playing standard cover 2, and then they would blitz and play a fire zone 4-2, you know, some sort of hybrid of that. And it remained simple for the secondary, but they generated havoc that way. And I think Tom Allen can do similar things in that perspective.
All right, T. Frank, that's going to have to be it for Ask T. Frank. And my friend, we got through two questions today. All right, let's move on. We'll get back in quarter four with more of my questions. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. T. Frank, I mentioned that we got through a grand total of two questions in the Ask T. Frank segment. But by the way, I'm not done with Ed's question from New Jersey, who asked about, you know, how the fans could watch the game differently. And you and I were talking about the example, you know, the play where KJ Winston made the interception. And I can't tell you how much more I appreciate the game after talking to people like you, where it's the greatest feeling in the world to watch now. I'll use the defense as an example again. And Manny Diaz, they call it, I guess, sometimes Landon has told us it's called 7-up. When they would have seven guys up on the line of scrimmage on obvious passing downs, and you don't know who's coming and who's not. But if you watch enough of the replays, you sort of have a feeling, and you have a better appreciation of what's coming because you studied it and looked at it before. So. Yeah. I'm not at the level, nearly at the level you are, T. Frank, but it makes the game so much more fun if you sort of have a little bit of a feel for it ahead of time.
This is what I think some people miss and why I get sort of frustrated with certain fans. And this is a me problem, let me just say. This is a me problem because you're allowed to enjoy football however you want. But the reality of football is it requires the total man. You cannot be brain dead stupid and be a Hall of Fame football player. Football is tactical and brutal at the same time. It is, you know, the analogies to war and all these things maybe are a little bit over the top, but there is a certain amount of coordinated response to a tactical plan from your opponent. And that part of it, the intelligence part of it, I find fascinating. It's the part that I'm obsessed with, is understanding the why behind the what. And then when you master that and it looks effortless, like that is the beauty of it, where then you get to just beat up a dude in front of you, but you're doing it with your entire being of, I'm smart enough that I got into the right position and I'm more talented than you. So really, like, it is the ultimate flex of, I'm just a better human than you are, and I'm going to prove it by scoring 7 here.
See, I thought you were going to finish that. I'm a better human than you because I understand the game better than you do. And, you know, I'll go.
And then when they're good looking, sorry to interrupt, but then when they're good looking too, like, it's just like, how is this fair? How is this fair that you're like an objectively beautiful man? You are unbelievably athletically talented and you're smarter than most people. Like, it just, it gets to a point where you just like, you have to marvel at it, but then at a certain point, like, if you think too much about it, then you start to go over the other side and be like, bah, 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 bah.
I'm not sure how we got in this football segment about beautiful men, but anyway,
it's fine. It's fine. We're both heterosexual. I'm married. Who cares?
Well, let's, I will say this though, T. Frank, because I'm the typical fan. I've always thought of myself as the typical fan. And I could casually watch a game and enjoy it that way. But I think if you care enough to watch or listen to our podcast, listen to all the things and watch the YouTube channel that you guys do with Blue White Illustrated, I think you care enough about the game that you do want to understand it more and you do want to appreciate it more. And not a, a small part of this, too, is you want to tell your buddies how much you know.
Yeah.
You want to have that ability and to be able. So I think some of these, I think it's great advice you were giving to our listeners on how, yes, you can appreciate the game more and understand it better. Just listen to T. Frank. All right, let's get back to our topic for the day. We're asking questions. We're kind of going position by position. And when we talk about the defense, we're on the defensive side of the ball. We got to talk about the change in positions for Abdul Carter. Mm-hmm. I think we all realize he's big enough, he's strong enough, he's good enough. But there still has to be some adjustment in changing positions, T. Frank, right?
Yeah, this is where I had the conversation on air with one of my colleagues last week, and I asked the question, am I overstating that, or is he just a baller and shut up nerd? And kind of came down on that second one of, yeah, shut up nerd. Everything we just said about how beautiful the game is and how many, you need to know what you're doing to maximize your talent to the fullest potential is like sometimes you're just better than the other dude athletically, and that's it. There is that level of athleticism out there and that disparity at the college level where you can just be that good. And I think that's the feeling on Abdul Carter all over the place. Now, I'm always looking at these guys and where they can improve and where they're going to be NFL players and what's going to make Abdul Carter a first-round pick and the next Micah Parsons, and it is those positional skills. And that's the game wrecker. To me, that is the game wrecker aspect. I will not move off the point of if you want him in the biggest games to get home, get sacks, and to stop Ohio State or Oregon or USC or whomever, he does have to learn enough about the position and the technique and the technical aspect to be unblockable against all opponents. That has to come for him to be All-American guy, where he's truly worthy of all of this praise we're heaping on him before he's even done it. But he can still get the job done. There's still going to be teams that are game planning to stop him, double teaming him, chipping him, giving him a lot of attention. And to me, the variability is, are there going to be games where they don't have to? And suddenly, Penn State's defense does not have the same bite that it did last year with a guy like Chop Robinson and Deesa Isaac, who you couldn't double one person, let alone the way that Manny Diaz's schemes created one-on-ones for everybody so that Abdul Carter is running free through the A-gap. Oh my God, 250 pounds coming at your quarterback without, you know, with a 5'9 running back blocking him. Now the question is, do they have that flexibility? Do they have that level of pass rushing potency to replicate what they did last year? I think they've got some really talented guys up front. I'm very high into Nyjah Sutton. On the flip side of, he is an excellent technician. He's going to be a problem for guys that don't have the same level of positional chops as him, and he's strong, and he's got super long arms. And then Amin Vanover is ultimately, like, through his entire career, has been slept on. So I think they've got the same combination of skills, but how do they deploy them? How is Abdul used? Those, I think, are the things that are going to determine the defensive flavor this year and how high they can reach in their ability to be dominant on defense. Because there is the opportunity for them to reach a similar level, even if they don't have all of the returning pieces with the same prestige at the cornerback position they had last year.
See, I look at it that he's a freak. We know that. And he's going to make those disruptive plays. My question is, can he make the boring plays? Can he hold the edge? Can he not overrun plays? Because that's, you know, part of the responsibility of being a defensive end.
We're talking about him as a starter, Jim, and there's a real possibility that he is a third down specialist where he plays 500 snaps, but a lot of them are in obvious passing situations. And Amin Vanover is doing that stuff anyway. Like, there's a reality where he doesn't have to do any of those things. Now, there's also a reality where he does all of those things. That's, I think, the big, huge variable in his positional development, determining all of these things for the fall.
Okay, T. Frank, we often forget or put it last, talking about the defensive backs. Let's start with the cornerbacks. 2 years ago, it was Joey Porter, Kalen King. Last year, it was Kalen King, Johnny Dixon. I'm always two very good cornerbacks, and a third, if you want to add Daquan Hardy in the slot. They're all gone. there are things that I'm sure the defensive coordinator can do because of the confidence level in those cornerbacks. Can they have that same kind of confidence this year with the cornerbacks?
It depends on what they want to be as a defense. And this is kind of where you saw different styles, even from Manny Diaz, where maybe it looks like they're in man coverage, but really they're playing an umbrella coverage that's a zone, technically. And then in 2022, they were running a lot more man coverage. So even within one system, you can have some differences in how you're deploying those talent. I like this group of corners. I think on the whole, they've got a lot of talent. Jalen Kimber came in. I think he is a good shadow corner. AJ Harris showed a lot this spring. I think you should be very excited about what he can be as a Penn State corner that has those kind of... Kalen King was a really physical run defender, and AJ Harris is bigger and about as fast. So, you know, you have a guy who has a lot of talent there. But it's just, again, kind of the offensive line conversation is these guys don't have the same level of experience. You even got a guy like Zion Tracy, who's super athletic and can play a couple of different positions. And then some freshmen that are also super talented. And I keep doing this. Audavian Collins could play this year as well as a guy who came in as a redshirt freshman last year, transferring from Mississippi State and played very well in the bowl game. So you've got four guys, maybe five, that can play, and a couple of those guys can play in the slot because the slot position is not just a safety. It's going to be a safety and then a bunch of corners. So they've got a depth of talent at corner. They just need to figure out who's going to rise to the top on the opposite end of the receiver position where you feel really good about four of these guys. Maybe you don't feel as good about as many receivers. This group is an aggregate, I think, is really good.
And we also feel pretty good about the safety position, that there are three guys who are very good, are worthy of being starters. And the way Tom Allen wants to play the defense now, we're talking about having three safeties out there. The question becomes, especially with a transfer at the safety because King Mack. Thank you. I kept wanting to say Kalen King instead of King Mack. With King Mack gone, where is that fourth safety? Where is the safety depth?
That's to be determined, and that's really the problem. Is, you know, Dakari Nelson is a really good athlete. He's also going to be backing up KJ Winston. I don't know that KJ Winston's coming off the field a whole lot. That field safety position was Zaki Wheatley. That was a perfect 1-2 punch there. King Mack could come in. He could play both positions, in my opinion, but that's where he was going to be really good, was that field safety position, and you could move guys around and the flexibility to play a couple of different guys there. I don't want to completely overlook Colin Dinkins and what he did during the blue-white game, because I do think there is an opportunity there. If push comes to shove and he keeps doing that, he could be the Dom DeLuca of this year, where he has a role on the defense, because he is 6'2", 197 pounds, looks like a corner, like a really long, athletic guy who is playing that nickel role. I don't know, you know, because you got those corners we talked about who are also super talented. I need to see a little more of that. And, you know, we won't before the season starts. So then it becomes which one of these young guys is going to be the one that steps up. Dejon Lane looks like a sophomore already. He just enrolled. But it's about that mental side. Safety, you need to know everything. It's kind of like linebacker and it's kind of like quarterback, where you've got to have a responsibility to know the run game and the pass game. And that's going to be determines who steps into these roles as that fourth safety.
All right, T. Frank, very good. Great show. Great answers to all the questions. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. Make sure you check us out next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.